The other day we were talking about the fact
when they were all sleeping.
Yes.
The other day
we were talking about the fact that after the Chasam Sofer came on the scene, the first half of the 1800s, so the learning of Torah picked up and there's much more halacha than there was in the earlier generation. There were rabbanim in the earlier generation, but everything picked up after the Chasam Sofer. So it's interesting, none of the svarim, there's so many svarim by the Chasam Sofer. Yesterday the fellow, on Friday night, the fellow quoted from the Chasam Sofer, Svarim on Chumash. That's interesting, there's so many Svarim by the Chasam Sofer, nothing was printed during his lifetime. The first thing that was printed after the Chasam Sofer passed away was his Tzavoya. And that was printed not by the members of the family, but rather by Rabbi Akiva Schlesinger, one of the more outstanding Talmidim of the Chasam Sofer. Was Rav Hillel Lichtenstein, who was known as Rav Hillel Kalamayer. He used to be in Hungary, he learned by the Chasam Sofer. And then after serving in the Rabbonis here in Hungary, he went to Kalamayer, which is in Galicia. So this Rav Hillel Kalamayer was, all the svarim that we have by him are all on Musar. We don't have any halacha from him. They say he was a big Talmid Chacham, but he didn't leave any svarim in halacha. But he has Terchacha about the reform. He and the Maram Shik also are one of the most outstanding Talmid, and probably the most outstanding Talmid of the Chasam Sofer. These two were the main individuals to push the Pirid HaKehilas.
I'm sorry for interrupting, but Hillel Lichtenstein, whom the rabbi just mentioned, he was quoted in parliament in Yiddish. So the first and only so far Yiddish was actually one. He wrote, he had this book called the Es Lasois or Et Lasot, which he asks himself shyless and gives himself chuvas to his own shyless. Most of them are political shyless. And one of them is whether Jews should stick to Yiddish or not. And then he gives a fairly long answer, which has Hungarian political significance, and Hungarian political right wing quoted.
Usually we refer to him as a Hillel Kalamayer. His family name is Lichtenstein. So he had a son-in-law who was a famous personality, Rabbi Akiva Schlesinger. He moved to Eretz Yisrael. And he was a big kanoi. He was the one who blew shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shecholiyos B'Shabbos. And because the Rif had that, the Rif once blew shofar when the Rif lived in Fez. He blew shofar Rosh Hashanah Shecholiyos B'Shabbos based on the Gemara that you don't necessarily need the best nagodla, the greatest bezna of the generation. In the presence of a bezna, you're permitted to blow shofar on Shabbos. So Rabbi Akiva Schlesinger did that, and he got into big trouble. Everybody was tumbling about it. In Europe, they wrote it up in the newspapers, and the Yiddish newspapers. All the rabbanim were tumbling. So this Rabbi Akiva Schlesinger put out a sefer called Lev HaIvri, which is a commentary on the bottom of the page of the Tzavua of the Chasam Sofer. How did he get the Tzavua? I don't know. Somebody explains in the introduction. I have a copy of the sefer, but I never read the introduction. So that was the first sefer for the Chasam Sofer that was printed. It's called Lev HaIvri because this Rabbi Akiva Schlesinger used to sign all of his tshuvas HaIvri. Ivri is a Rashi Tevis Akiva Ben. Forgot what his father's name was. His tshuvas are basically he didn't have a Mishnah Brura, of course. It wasn't available in Eretz Yisrael, and he didn't have a Shari tshuva next to the Behetiv. So today most of his tshuvas are irrelevant. Everybody knows the answers. He quotes the same sources that the Mishnah Brura has and the Shari tshuva has. Well, I don't know why they reprinted the tshuvas. Most of them are irrelevant. So that was the first sefer from the Chasam Sofer that was printed. After that, the tshuvas of the Chasam Sofer were printed by his son, the Ksav Sofer. The tshuvas of the Chasam Sofer have a lot of famous halachas. Many of them we still follow today. He has, among other things, Sonia mentioned the other day that he attacked Aaron Harina. Aaron Harina was an Orthodox rabbi, but he was the first one who started sort of the reform movement over here. So one big issue was about the sturgeon. The sturgeon is a fish that has fins and scales. Strictly speaking, it should be considered kosher. But the Ramban, in his commentary on Chumash, writes that the scales are only a siman of kashrus if they're attached on one side, and you can scrape them all off by using a knife by scraping in one direction. The scales of the sturgeon are attached on both sides, and the only way to remove the scales is if you yank them out from underneath. So that's a chiddush of the Ramban in his commentary on Chumash. And the Magen Mishnah quotes it. So the Nei Yehuda has a tshuva, but he writes he doesn't think that we have to paskin like this Ramban on Chumash. This Aaron Harina followed the Nei Yehuda, and the other, all of the Gdolim said, no, we don't follow the Nei Yehuda on this, we follow the Ramban. It happened in America also years ago. The conservatives, many years ago, 70 years ago, 80 years ago, the conservatives were declaring that the sturgeon is kosher because it has fins and scales. And at that time, the Orthodox Rabbanim said, we don't follow that Nei Yehuda, we follow the Ramban, who says that sturgeon is not kosher. You have to be able to scrape the scales off by scraping in one direction. This Aaron Chariner, the Rosh Yeshivas of his name is Aleph Ches Reish, Aaron Chariner Rabina. That's how we used to sign his name. So in the days of the Tanaim, there was a Tana Elisha ben Avuya, who became an Apikoros. He was the Rebbe of Rav Meir, and he referred to himself as Acher. You heard the Baskol come out from the Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim, Shuvu Bonim Shavavim. So he understood the Baskol to mean Bonim Chutz Me'acher, that his tshuva wouldn't help. So the Tanaim always referred to him as Acher. So the Chasam Sefer refers to Aaron Harina Rabiner as the Acher, as if he is the Apikoros, like the Tana Elisha ben Avuya. Elisha ben Avuya was an Orthodox rabbi, became an Apikoros, worse than a Reform rabbi. So this Aaron Harina Rabiner became a Reform rabbi. The Chasam Sefer has a famous line where he talks about Moshe Mendelssohn. He says, we owe a debt of gratitude to Mendelssohn, that apparently there was a big issue in Germany. A Kohen wanted to marry a Grusha, who was his previous wife. The Kohen was married to a woman he divorced, and then he wanted to remarry her. So the Reform rabbis there said that a Kohen is not allowed to marry a Grusha who is married to someone else. But if he himself is married to the Grusha, that should be permissible. Well, what's so embarrassing about that? So Mendelssohn defended the tradition of the Mishnayos of the Gemara, that even if the Kohen himself divorced his own wife, he's not allowed to remarry his own Matzah Grusha, so his own wife he's not allowed to. So the Chasam Sefer writes, we owe Mendelssohn a debt of gratitude for defending the traditional position. Apparently, this was a case that was brought up to the government, that a Kohen wanted to remarry his own Grusha, and the Rabbanim wouldn't let him, so the Kohen was suing the Rabbanim in secular court. So he says, we owe a debt of gratitude for Mendelssohn to defend the tradition, but he refers to him as Rav Moshe Dessau. He lived in the city Dessau, so the Rosh Yeshivas is Reish Mem Dalet Rav Moshe Dessau, B'Sufrei Ramad, Al Tishluchu Yad. That's a famous lotion that the Chasam Sefer has in his tshuvas. You shouldn't read any of the books by Moshe Mendelssohn. There were several tshuvas when the son of the Chasam Sefer printed the tshuvas. So every so often there's a tshuva where you have to leave out the name of the person to whom the tshuva is written, or the name of the city, because it's embarrassing. So the Chasam Sefer has a tshuva to Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes, who was a rabbi in Zalkova, that's in Galicia. So Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes wrote a book about an introduction to the Talmud, and he wrote another book, short books, about Torah HaNeviim. To what extent are we obligated to listen to the Navi if he wants to change the halachas temporarily, permanently, and so on. So the Chasam Sefer has a tshuva where they have the name of Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes written. The tshuva was written to him. He has writing comments on the Sefer Torah HaNeviim. And then there's another tshuva. So the children didn't feel uncomfortable about recognizing the fact that the father wrote a tshuva to Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes. But there's another tshuva to Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes where his name does not appear. The reason why? Because the children felt they didn't. Chasam Sefer had passed away already, so he wasn't supervising the publication of the tshuvas. So the children felt that it would be embarrassing to have Tzvi Yishchais to have his name. The issue that was, and this is Tshuva became popular in recent years with the discussion about brain death. How do we determine the moment of death? When is a person considered dead? When is he still considered alive? So the several of the governments in Europe passed a law that you're not allowed to bury a person who dies until 72 hours go by after the doctor signed the death certificate, because they realized that every so often the doctors made a mistake and they declared somebody is dead. The person was really alive, so they were burying living people. So Reb Tzvi Yishchais suggested maybe we should go along with this. So the Orthodox Jews never went along. There's some countries in Europe, but they still have, I think, in Switzerland, they still have such a law. So when someone, an Orthodox Jew, dies in Switzerland, so they take the body to a different country to bury him within 3 days. Supposed to bury the people on the same day that they die, if it's reasonable. Unless it'll be more kavod ha'neis to postpone the kvura. But normally kavod ha'neis dictates to bury on the same day. So Tzvi Yishchais raised an issue and he sent to Shaila to the Chasam Sefer that maybe we should go along with the Din of the Malchusa, because he quotes a Mishnah in the end of Maseches Nida, in a source from Maseches Sofrim, which was written by the Gaonim, not from the days of the Tanoim but Amaroim, that the Gemara talks about such a thing, that people, we think that they're dead and they're really still alive. So the Tanoim and the Gemara recognize such a thing as possible. So maybe it's a suffix, Hakonis Nefashis, maybe you should go along with the Din of the Machusa. So the Chasam Sofer and the Tshuva gets very upset about him. And he says, is something wrong with you? Are you an apikoris? You don't believe in the tradition? You have a din, kavati b'rema yomahu. So because it's an insulting Tshuva to the Maritz Chayis, so that's why the children left out his name. But it's interesting, we know that the Tshuva was written to the Maritz Chayis because he was very proud of his correspondence with the Chasam Sofer. He printed, Maritz Chayis printed a separate sefer, my correspondence with the Chasam Sofer. So he has the letters that he sent to the Chasam Sofer and the responses that the Chasam Sofer gave. So you can read the response of the Chasam Sofer, the tshuva of the Chasam Sofer about the burying on the same day, is paragraph by paragraph responding to each paragraph that the Reb Tzvi Yishchais wrote. That's why it's strange if you don't know the background. It's strange, you read a tshuva from the Chasam Sofer, in the middle of nowhere, he starts quoting a Maran Nebuchim. What's Fartar Arayim with a Maran Nebuchim for? Because Maritz Chayis quoted the Maran Nebuchim. So every paragraph in that Chasam Sofer's tshuva corresponds line by line to the Shaila that the Maritz Chayis sent him. Yishai mentioned that the other day that the Chasam Sofer has a tshuva prohibiting the use of a train on Shabbos. When a few years before they brought the trains to Hungary. The trains were used in other parts of Europe. So before they came to, I think 10 years before the train came to Hungary, the Chasam Sofer already wrote a tshuva asking that, you know, even though the floor of the train was 10 tefachim above the ground, and we pass on the Shulchan Aruch that there's no violation of Tchumen whenever you're lemaila me'asara. So the Chasam Sofer explains why the din in the Gemara doesn't apply to this case. But the floor has more than dalat al dalat tochem on it. The Gemara said beferish that the kula doesn't apply in such a situation. So Yishai pointed out that someone published an essay where they showed that the Chasam Sofer's tshuva is a response paragraph by paragraph to an essay that was written by Aaron Harina Rabina Acher, explaining why it is permissible to go on the train on Shabbos. Some say it's true. There's a response to that paragraph by paragraph. In that tshuva to the Maritz Chayis, where he talks about burying the people on the same day, so he has a very interesting comment, which is very relevant today, extremely crucial. He says, what do you think the Tanoim were doctors? All the medical knowledge that they knew, they picked up from the non-Jewish doctors. They didn't know on their own. And then he says about the comment that the Gemara learns out from a pasuk in Parshas Noach in connection with the Mabul. It says, in the Chumash Kol HaShanishmas Ruach Chaim B'Yapov, any living animal who breathes through his nose was drowned because of the maple. So the Gemara says that, the Gemara sounds like it says that if a person is breathing, then he's alive. If a person is not breathing, then he's dead. So there are some Rabbanim who say that that's the definition of life. Life means indeed the breathing. person is on a respirator but he's unable to breathe independently, so that's considered death. That's what Rabbi Tendler claims that Rav Moshe Feinstein said. Doesn't say it in the Tshuvas of Rav Moshe Feinstein, but that's what Rabbi Tendler says. So the Chasam Sofer writes in his Tshuva, he thinks that that whole comment about breathing is an asmachta. And he says the idea about breathing, the Chachamim must have had a tradition from Moshe Rabbeinu, that if a person is not breathing for 15 minutes and under normal conditions, we have the right to assume that he's dead. But he says all the medical knowledge that the Gemara has is all based on what they heard from the Nochrim. They didn't have independent knowledge on their own. It's interesting, the Talmidim of the Chasam Sofer was so kofuf to him. As I mentioned the other day, he gave a shiur every single day of the year, even Yom Kippur. He gave a shiur on Seder Avodah, with the one exception of Tisha B'Av. So if the Rebbe gives a shiur every single day, 7 days a week, every single day, of course they're gonna pick up everything from the Rebbe. Chasam Sofer was extremely appreciative to Rav Mordechai Benet, who was around 20 years older than him, I think. Mordechai Benet. And Chasam Sofer printed a manuscript of the Rimigash on Gemara Shavuos, so he wanted a haskama on the Sefer. So all the Rabbonim said, how can you give a haskama on the Rimigash? The Rimigash was the Rebbe of the Rambam's father. The Rimigash was a student of the Riv. What, we're going to give a haskama on the Rimigash? So the Chasam Sofer felt you're not allowed it. There was a cherem from earlier generations. You're not permitted to print any Sefer unless you have a haskama sahif. Chasam Sofer was of the opinion, even if you're publishing a manuscript from a Rishon, we're not giving a haskama on the Rishon, we're giving a haskama on your authenticity, that you're an honest person, that you're not forging the manuscript. So he didn't want to print the Rimigash until he got a haskama. So he was extremely appreciative to Rav Mordechai Benet for the fact that he gave him the haskama when he printed that sefer. There were several prominent Rabbanim in Hungary who were not Talmidim of the Chasam Sofer. There were those who were Talmidim of Rav Mordechai Benet. And one of those was Take Ari Assad, Rav Yehuda Assad, who was a big Paisek. The Chasam Sofer, in one of his tshuvas, writes that he met this Ari Assad once in person. And they were together for a day, and they spoke and learning on many, many sugis and shas. And he writes that he was very pleasantly surprised to see what a fantastic Talmud Chacham he was. That not all the learning was by the Chasam Sofer, there were others also. Ari Assad was a Talmud of Rav Mordechai Benet.
We mentioned earlier one of the most outstanding Talmidim of the Chasam Sofer, the Maharam Shik, the Hungarian learners say that in one generation there were three Rabbanim with the name Moshe. There was the Chasam Sofer, a Moshe Sofer, the Talmud, a Moshe Shik. There was the Yismach Moshe, we'll have to talk about him, a Moshe Teitelbaum. So they size it up as follows. They say, Chasam Sofer had learned and had begun. He spent time learning and he knew what he learned. The Maram Sheik had learned and Ishkiken, that's the way they size it up. He learned that he didn't really know how to learn that well. And the Maram Sheik and the Yismach Moshe, who was the Rav in Uhel, said, Nishkalan and Ishkiken. He didn't spend any time learning and he knew anyway. He knew a real HaKadosh. The story was that the Maram Shik didn't have the same derech halimud as the Chasam Sofer. Today in yeshivas, the Maram Shik's style of learning is much closer to the way they learn in yeshivas than the Chasam Sofer. So today they would say just the reverse. But the Maram Shik was one of the most outstanding halimud of the Chasam Sofer. He carried on the battle against the reforms. During his lifetime is when the reforms started tumbling about the seats of the dead. Continued to practice Bris Milah, but they refused to do the mitzvahs of the test. So the Maram Shik put up a whole battle about this, and he said that you're not yet to the mitzvah, that it's halacha l'mashe nisina, that you need mitzvah, has to be mitzvahs of the test, because it will, if you don't do it exactly the way it was done for centuries, then it'll be a sakana for the
based on data. So they've tested 100,000 babies. Maybe they'll test 500,000 babies. Maybe they'll come to the realization that if you didn't do the tzitzit to the bear, it'll be a sakana to the baby. So this is a chiddush. The whole thing is called a chiddush of the Maharam Sheikh. That first of all, that the tzitzit is part of the bris milah. That you're not yet to the mitzvah, that mitzvah, the simple pshat in the world is not so. Secondly, he says that if something is a sakana, 1 in 1,000,000 chance that a person will get sick, that's called the suffix sakana. So the Hasam Sofer himself writes, takeret, that it's only called the suffix sakana, even if it's not anywhere near 50-50. It has to be a reasonable sakana that people are concerned about. But if it's a sakana, 1 in 1,000,000 or something like that, meaning alafafi alafim, so the Hasam Sofer says that's not considered a sakana. So there was a famous tshuva that was written, supposedly written by the Hasam Sofer, that it's not necessary to have tzitzit with that. The Maharam Sheikh was not aware of that tshuva. So he was convinced that the Hasam Sofer couldn't have said such a thing. But it's hard to assume that this is a forgery. Pashtus is that the Hasam Sofer really wrote such a tshuva, and it doesn't pose any problem. What is the meaning of the name Sheikh? So when the Goyish government required that all the Jewish families have to adopt a family name, so the Maharam Sheikh was very opposed. He was opposed to adopting Goyish names. So he made up the name Sheikh, which is the Rosh HaTevis of Shem Yisrael Kodesh. We should all keep our Yiddish name. We shouldn't have any Goyish Sheikh is known for many of the tshuvas that he writes. They're very, very famous tshuvas. He has many had a practice that a chassan only puts on a kippur on Yom Kippur, whatever the meaning is, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, after the first year. Within the first year of marriage, he doesn't wear a kippur. But Imam Sheikh writes about this. What in the world is that based on? So he says, no. He says, in Hungary, they used to get married so young. It looked like babies. It looked like a little child is making believe that he's married. But by us, that they get married after 20, no one gets married in such a age. It doesn't look like a joke. But the whole meaning doesn't apply. He has many, many famous tshuvas that he's known for. He has a tshuva about the issue about the copepods. He writes, every body of water in the world has copepods in it. He said, but it's usually a mere chain of matzli. It's less than 10% chance that you're going to be swallowing one of these bugs. But he says, in your community, he writes down, if your community, you think that it's a 10% or more chance that you're going to be swallowing a bug, then you're right, then you have to filter the water. He records that there used to be a meaning that they always would filter the water for Pesach. Maybe there'd be a crumb. Maybe there'll be a mashua comments in the water. So he says that to filter water, when halacha requires filtering, wouldn't be permissible on Shabbos because it's a malacha of borer. But to filter water for Pesach, but the whole thing was only a chumrah, it's all chalaimus. So he says that is permissible. But he writes, in your community, if you say that there's a miut hamatzah, if there's 10% chance or more that you may be swallowing a bug, then you're not allowed to filter the water on Shabbos. This whole tshuva in the Maharam Sheikh is in contradiction to what the Chayyadim writes. The Chayyadim writes, based on any other poskim before and after him, say like this, that even filtering water when the halacha requires would be permissible on Shabbos, because the Nachum drink the water the way it is. So you can't say that that's considered soulless. Al pi halacha, we're not allowed to swallow bugs. But since the Umas Oilam, since the Nachum drink the water the way it is, so that's not really considered soulless. Shlomo Breuer, the father of Rabbi Yosef Breuer, I live in Washington Heights. Shlomo Breuer was a Talmud of the Maharam Sheikh, and several of the tshuvas in the Maharam Sheikh's Sefer were written to Shlomo Breuer. Did away with it. One time, every time they had a convention, they came up with some new proposals. So one time they decided to do away with Kol Nidre, because they felt that it's a Chil Hashem, that Jewish businessmen would sometimes be dishonest, And they would say, well, we're a mataneta. We promised we're going to deliver goods by a certain date. And they didn't deliver it, so they said, because they're mata benedorm. They said, kol nidre. So the Reform rabbis had a conference. They decided to do away with kol nidre. Then they were considering allowing intermarriage and other crazy things. And Ram Sheikh was more concerned about the doing away with the kol nidre than was about the intermarriage. He said, the intermarriage, that position is not going to last too long. The Jewish people are going to reject that. They're not going to want to have intermarriage. But the doing away with the minhagim, that was the worst by him. Can't do away with any minhagim. The same thing, the Reform were making fun of the minhag that the chassan wears a kittel under the chuppah. So they said that it's a chil Hashem to wear a kittel because the Umas Olam who look at a Jewish wedding make fun of it. So the Maim Sheikh says, why should they make fun of it? It's a beautiful minhag. The kittel is, we bury mason in a kittel, and the wearing of the kittel is an indication. That's what he says, that's what he writes. The minhag of wearing a kittel is an indication that they're going to be married till the day that he dies. Till death do us part. And he writes a story, I don't know if it's true. Yeah. He writes a story that the king of the country, or the duke, whatever the story was, had different homes. And sometimes he had a summer home where he would spend time. And many Jews lived in the neighborhood. So the king or the duke, whoever it was, once insisted that he wants them to have a wedding, a Jewish wedding, and do everything exactly the way they do it, but no one's watching. He wants to watch a Jewish wedding. So they had a wedding, and the host was a kittel, and they explained to the goyish duke what that was all about. And the goyish duke thought that it was a beautiful thought. My impression was that it's usually assumed that the reason why the chassan wears a kittel is because it's like Yom Kippur, that it's a day mechilas avodah. So just like a kangaroo on Yom Kippur, walking day lavan, so to the chassan wears a white uniform. In many Jewish communities in Europe, they always had chuppas in shul, but in Hungary, many of the communities never allowed it until the beginning of the Reform movement, when they wanted to imitate. By the Catholics, marriage is one of their seven sacraments, and have to have it in the church. So the Reform introduced that the chuppah should take place in the shul davke, imitating the Christians. And the same thing, many communities, they always had the bima in the front of the shul. The Rambam writes, the reason why you have the bima in the middle is that everybody should hear the rabbi who holds the drasha, or everybody should hear the balkari when he lays. Apparently they weren't so concerned, everybody should hear the chazan, that they didn't care about. But they're interested, everyone should hear the balkari, kriyas hatorah, and everybody should hear the rabbi when he preaches the sermon. So the Kesef Mishnah, Rabbi Yosef Kara, writes in his commentary on the side of the Rambam that many communities where the shul is so tiny, so there's no need to have the bima be emtza. So if they had the bima in the front before the Reform movement, so we have no complaints. Those who changed it because they wanted to imitate the church, so that's what the Maram Shik went wild about. That was one of the changes that the Reform introduced, to move the bima to the front. So that's what the Imam Sheikh was fighting against. And the same thing, to have the chuppas in the shul, they asked that. Rav Soloveitchik was of the opinion that you're not allowed to use the shul for any other purpose other than davening and learning. And the reason why we allow a bris in shul is because it's right after shacharis, so it's a tircha tzibura. There's the everybody to go somewhere else. But if you're having a bris in the afternoon, he said you're not allowed to have it in shul. And the chuppah, even though it's a mitzvah, not allowed to use the shul for any other mitzvah. Also not. So it's not yet time to say Tefillah Sadera. I'll continue a little bit with what we were discussing the other day. The Reform first started picking on little minhagim, and then they did away with Dinim Derabbanan, and then they did away with Dinim Deraisa as well. So that's why the Maram Sheikh and the Chassam Sofer before him were so touchy about minhagim. But there is a very difficult tshuva in the Chassam Sofer, where he emphasizes the significance of minhagim. We usually assume that a din deraisa is very chomer. A sofik deraisa, you have to go to chomer. A din derabbanan is a little less chomer. Sofik derabbanan lekula. A And the minig is a little lower than it in the Rabbanon. So the Chasam Sofer writes in one of his tshuvas, and quote, this line is quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva on the bottom of the page in Figur Vedeya, that a Safek minhag is l'chumre, because minig is binding mitam neder, and a neder is a din derais. He's coming to emphasize the significance of observance of minhagim. The pashtus is that it's certainly not correct. There are many, at least 20 other tshuvas, where the Chasam Sofer himself writes that the Gemara says minig is binding mitam neder, that itself is only min rabbanon. That if one violates a minig, is in violation of bayachel. Gemara says it's only bayachel min rabbanon. But in this tshuva, the Chasam Sofer was trying to emphasize how important minhagim are, so he exaggerates a little bit. So he writes that safik minig luchumre, because minig mitam neder, and that's really a din deraisa. So the Chasam Sofer with the Maramshik were both very busy fighting against the Reform, who first started picking on minhagim. First they wanted to do away with the kittel under the chuppah and other minhagim, and then they moved on to bigger and better things. The Maramshik has a very fascinating tshuva that was picked up by Poskin later. I don't know if they picked it up from the Maramshik or they developed the idea on their own. Ramshik had a Talmud who learned in his yeshiva. When he moved to Chus, then he had the big yeshiva. First he was in a smaller village. They had a very tiny yeshiva. Most of the Rabbanim had a yeshiva. Then when he moved to Chus, they had a very big yeshiva. So the Ramshik had a Talmud who was in Rabbanis, and his main function was he was fighting Reform, and he didn't enjoy it. So at that time, in the late 1800s, he was offered a Rabbanus in Eretz Yisrael. It's hard to believe. And he wouldn't have to fight any Reform. He would just be able to pass Kanshilas, and give Shiurim, and sit and learn the rest of the time. So he packed all of his things, and he was on his ready to leave to Eretz Yisrael. He sent a letter to the Maramshik, and can the Rebbe give him a bracha on his move? So the Maramshik writes him back a letter, which he felt important enough to be included in the volume of Shadis and Chuvas Maramshik. I cannot give you a bracha because you're doing Shalai Kedin. You're not permitted to move to Eretz Yisrael. So he writes, when you were learning in the yeshiva, we had no right to draft you into the army. That's the expression that he uses. We had no right to insist that you have to go into the Rabbanus and fight Reform. Many of your classmates who learned to the yeshiva at the same time went into business, but you volunteered on your own to join the army, to go into the Rabbanus and to fight Reform. Considered it like an army to fight Reform all the time, and you are very successful. So he coins an expression. He writes, the general has no right to leave the front till all of the soldiers are accounted for, and the captain of the ship has no right to leave until all of the passengers are accounted for. You have no right to leave Eretz Yisrael, you're fighting Reform. And he quotes an incident that we only have, the only source for that story is in the Tshuvas Maramshik, that the Chasam Sofer was born in Frankfurt and brought up there in Frankfurt, and then later on he moved to Hungary. Many of his tshuvas, he signs off Moshe HaKotten in Frankfurt. He's very proud of the fact that he was brought up in Frankfurt, and he always wanted to go back to Frankfurt. So on one occasion he was offered Rabbanus in Frankfurt, so he was really considering leaving Freshburg and going back to Germany. He was basically a Yekke. Then when the Balabatim of Freshburg heard about it, so they all came to him one evening. Pleaded with him, you can't leave us. If you leave us, the next rabbi may not be so successful in fighting Reform, and we'll all be lost to Orthodoxy. So the Chasam Sofer reconsidered and he said, okay, he's not going to leave, he's going to stay there. So this is the line in the Tshuvas Maramshik, where he writes that one who's Oisik and Rabbanis in fighting Reform and fighting assimilation and intermarriage is not permitted to leave Chutz Loretz, even though it's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. It's not permitted to leave to go to Eretz Yisrael. It's interesting, years later, in the early 1900s, Rav Kook was appointed chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. And he was negotiating by correspondence with Rav Chaim Eiser in Vilna that he should move to Eretz Yisrael. Rav Kook was going to remain the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, and he had a title for Rav Chaim Eiser. He'll be the Reish Kol B'nei HaGoyim, the chief rabbi of the rest of the world. He had an apartment for him, and he had a parnasa, a salary for him, and Rav Chaim Eiser was ready to move to Eretz Yisrael. And in the last minute, Chaim Eiser backed out, and he sent of Kuka letter, and he refers to this tshuva in the Maram Shik, that the Rabbanim, he thought that he could retire from Vilna, and the other Rabbanim would take over. He was ready, an older person. The other Rabbanim insisted, no, that they can't do it without him. They still need his leadership. So that's where Rav Chaim Moshe writes. According to the Maram Shik, he's not permitted to leave Vilna, he has to stay behind. This was the position that Rabbi Soloveitchik always used to say. Anyone who's a chinuch rabbonis in America is not permitted to go on Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, because anyone who's a chinuch rabbonis is fighting assimilation and fighting intermarriage. He was very upset when his children moved to Eretz Yisrael. He thought they should have stayed in America. There's a famous line in the Chuvas Maram Shik where he was fighting against the reform. They changed the tzura of the Beis HaKnesses. They moved the bima to the front. We mentioned yesterday that even though the Kesef Mishnah, Rabbi Yosef Kara, writes in his commentary on the side of the Rambam, on the side of the page in the Rambam, that the bima in the middle is only necessary if it's a big shul, so everyone will be able to hear the Malkore when he reads from the Sefer Torah. Everyone will be able to hear the rabbi when he gives a drasha. But if you have a small shul, there's nothing wrong with having the beam in the front. That's how Rav Yosef Kara writes. That was apparently the practice of many Sephardic shuls, which were tiny, which were small. So, but in Europe, that was not the practice. In Eastern Europe, they always used to have the beam in the middle. And then when they changed it because of the reform, we were trying, like Sonia explained, they were trying to imitate the churches, the Christian churches. So the Gdolim were extremely opposed. So the Maram Shik had he developed an idea. The Gemara has a din based on a pasuk in Divrei HaYomim. It says in Divrei HaYomim that when Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdash, he built it according to a plan that was given to him by his father David HaMelech. It was given the plan by, I think, God HaNavi, God HaChazer the Navi. And the pasuk says, HaKol Tiksav Yad Hashem Alai Haskil. The whole layout of the Beis HaMikdash, all the rooms below in the basement and upstairs, all of the rooms had a specific layout and they weren't permitted to be Mishana, the Tzuras Beis HaMikdash. So Maram Shik writes that since the Beis HaKnesses has a status of a Mikdash Miyad, so one is not permitted to be Mishana either. So what was the significance of having the Bima of the Emtza? What is that supposed to correspond to in the Beis HaMikdash? So they all assumed that the Mizbeach in the Azara was not exactly centered, but it wasn't moved up to the front. The Mizbeach was sort of in the center, so that on Sukkot it was possible to do Hakafis with the Hoshainas and the Beis HaMikdash. They used to go around. So that was the insistence in the shuls, that a shul is a Mikdash Miyad, and you have to have the beam in the middle so that it will be similar to the Mizbeach and the Beis HaMikdash, so that on Sukkot everyone will be able to do the Hakafis, to walk around the beam. We have such a line, the later poskim, after the Chasam Sofer point out, we have a line in the Slichas on Yom Kippur, that now we have no Beis HaMikdash, we have no Kohen Gadol, we have no Seder Avodah, the Ein Lanu Shiur, Rak HaTorah Zos, the only thing we have left is the Torah. The only part, the essence of the Beis HaMikdash was really the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the Torah. So today all we have left is the Torah. That's why the Bima B'Yemtza was considered a carryover from having the Mizbeach B'Yemtza. There's another very famous tshuva by the Maram Shik. He discusses a situation where a man was not well and he wasn't able to tie the tefillin on his arm, but he had his wife and his daughters help him tighten the tefillin on his arm. So he discusses whether the man is Yotze the Mitzvah or not. Why? Because we learn out from a pasuk that women, even though women are obligated in mezuzah, it's a mitzvah sasei sheloi hazman grama, but the women cannot write the mezuzah. The Chumash Dvarim, we assume that any two psukim that are adjacent to each other are called smuchim, and smuchim has the status like a hekesh, just like if you have two dinim written in the same pasuk, we assume that there's a connection between the two. So in Chumash Dvarim we have many, many, many famous drushes that are based on smuchim, that you have two psukim next to each other. So in the first parasha of Priyashma, you have a kshartam leos al yadecho, and the next pasuk is of saftam al mezuzas beisecho bishorecho. So the only one who is able to write a mezuzah is a man, a Jewish person, who's obligated to put on tefillin and who puts on tefillin. If you have women are not obligated to put on tefillin, dochrim don't have the mitzvah, or an apikoiris doesn't keep the mitzvah. So these people who are not b'nei kshira, you have to have a person who is obligated to wear tefillin and puts on tefillin. Such a person can write the mezuzah. So the Shulchan Aruch, we assume, not only does it apply to a chsavtam on mezuzahs, writing the sefer Torah, tefillin, and mezuzah have the same thing. So Anisha Psula for writing the mezuzah, we assume that a woman would be Psula to stitch the sefer Torah together as well. Practice used to be in Europe when they made when the community would put up money to write a sefer Torah every 50 years or so, everyone would chip in money to write a sefer Torah, so they would all fulfill the mitzvah b'shutvus of kisvo lechem asashira hazais, writing a sefer Torah. So the women wanted to participate also, but a woman is not kosher for writing oisias in a sefer Torah. So the women know how to stitch. So the women used to stitch the areas, the parchments together. So the poskim in the area, they're right, that's not right, that women are not only puzzled for ksiva sefer Torah, for ksiva sefer Torah, tefillin and mezuzah, but puzzled for all tikkunim. So this is a question, how far do you go? Let's say a woman is obligated to fulfill a mitzvah mezuzah, but she can't write her own mezuzah. So what about to nail up the mezuzah? He says she has to get a man to nail the mezuzah to her doorpost, because that's also the tikkun ha-mezuzah. They say, no, that's the kiyum ha-mitzvah. The women are mechuyev ha-mezuzah, so they're mechuyev to fix them, to nail the mezuzah onto the doorpost themselves. They don't have to get a man. So the Maram Shik has this big chiddush. He assumes that women are not except women are possible even for tightening the tefillin onto the arm. So he says that if the woman is going to tie the ritzuvas on the husband's arm, then the husband won't be yotze the mitzvah. That's very questionable. Was a big dispute. Usually the Maram Shik was very kofuf to his Rebbe, to the Chasam Sefer. There was a big issue. We have a lot of doctors here. There was a big issue. To what extent do we rely on information that a doctor tells us? The doctors know, based on past history, that such a sickness exists. And most of the time the sickness will develop like this. So do we consider everything a doctor says as a suffix? So therefore, let's say on Shabbos we would be Mahal Shabbos to take the person to the hospital, or on Yom Kippur we would insist the person should eat, because we know that the doctors have nemunas. We believe them to say that such a sickness exists, and there is a possibility that this person may be besakana. Do we even assume that the doctor's information, the doctor's knowledge is of Adoes, and even Lahokel, let's say in Hilchas Nida? The doctor says that this is not Damin Amokar. He says this is something else. So the Chasam Sefer was of the opinion that all medical knowledge is only considered on the level of a Sofek. So you have to be Machmir and Sofek Sarkonis Nefashis based on what a doctor says. But you wouldn't be able to be Mekel and Hilchas Nida based on what a doctor says, because all doctor's information is only that such a thing exists, but not specifically that he knows what he's talking about over here. And we usually assume not so. We usually don't assume like that Chasam Sefer. So the first one who really disagreed with Chasam Sefer was his devoted Talmid, the Maram Shik. He proves from Gemaris, from Mishnayis and from Gemaris, that even in the days of the Tanaim, where the medicine was not as developed at all as it is today, not at all developed like today, we consider the psak of the doctor. When the doctor says, he sizes up the situation, we assume that the information that the doctor tells us is considered a badoy, it's not just a suffix. One of the most prominent students of the Maram Shik was the Maharsha, who was later a major poisek. He has tshuvas, and his tshuvas are followed today by many of the rabbanim. I mentioned the other day about the Rav Mordechai Banet. In the history books, they write during his lifetime, the four major poskim in Europe at that time, the contemporaries, were Rabbi Akiva Eiger with the Nesibis, who used to correspond to, with each other, the Chasam Sofer, who was the son-in-law of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, his second wife. Chasam Sofer had three wives. After the first wife died, he married the daughter of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. After she died, he married another woman. We'll get to that later. So the Chasam Sofer was one of the major poskim, and Rav Matra Benet was also considered one of the four major poskim who were contemporaries of each other. So he mentioned that this Rav Matra Benet was originally a Talmud. Where did he learn Torah? He was a Talmud of Rabbi Yosef Steinhardt. He was a Yekish Rav who lived in Furt, and he wrote the Tshuva Zichron Yosef, which is often quoted by the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. He has very strong tshuvas, very stark tshuvas. So we mentioned that Maria Assad, Yehuda Yale, Maria Assad was a Talmud of Amartcha Benet. He had no shaykhes with the Chasam Sofer. And on one occasion, the Chasam Sofer met him, and he was very, they spoke in learning for a whole day solid, and he was extremely impressed by his bikias and by his charifas. So the Maria Assad was also very involved in fighting reform. First, the reform first started by picking on a little bit Minhagim, and then they started to do away with Yontav Sheni, and then they introduced, first they introduced the organ in the shul that had a non-Jew play the organ. That's based on what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that you can have a non-Jew play music at a Shevet Brochas on Shabbos, because that's a shvuz de shvuz b'makom mitzvah, asking a nochri to violate a nisa de rabbanon. And then later on they had a Jew play the organ, and they said the reason why it's permissible is because playing music is only a gzeirah mid rabbanon, it's mutam in HaTorah, and then shvuz b'mikdash, just like in the Beis HaMikdash they used to play music on Shabbos, so too in the shul, shul is a mikdash miyat, you can also play music. And to prove that the Beis HaKnesses has the status of a mikdash miyat, and therefore dinim de rabbanon don't apply, we should apply the rule of ein shvuz b'mikdash to a shul. So they quoted, it was a big joke, they quoted in Shulchan Aruch, the Rama says that one is permitted to touch the big menorahs in the Beis HaKnesses. So they said, "Aye, but the big menorah is muktzeh." So the answer is because it's in Beis HaKnesses and Shavuos b'Mikdash, you have to observe the din d'rabbanan. If you look in the Rama, you see that's not at all what the Rama said. Rama said you're not allowed to touch something that's muktzeh because he may move it. The prohibition against handling muktzeh is only if you move the muktzeh. If you just touch it, there's no prohibition. But if it's a light item, like a beitzah and all the biyantiv is muktzeh, so you're not allowed to touch the beitzah because he may move it without even realizing it. But if it's a heavy thing, like the menorahs hakadosh of the Beis HaKnesses that are attached to the floor, so by touching it, it's not going to move. So that's the reason, that's the real reason that the Rama gives. Rama says, menorahs gedolish of the Beis HaKnesses, you're permitted to touch because they're not going to move just because you're going to touch it because it's so heavy. So the Reform misquoted the Rama. They said the Rama says you're allowed to handle muktzah in the shul, because muktzah is only the rabbanon and the shul is a mikdash miyat, and then shvuz b'mikdash. The Bari Assad told over a story from his Rebbe, from Ramatra Benet, which is now, it's a famous mashal. Ramatra Benet once met the Reform Rabbi, and the Reform Rabbi didn't know how to learn at all. Didn't know Shulchan Aruch. So he asked him, how do you paskin shalas? When the Balabatim ask you a shalas, how do you paskin? So he says, look, I don't know Shulchan Aruch. So whenever they paskin a shalas, I always go to Chumrah. Ramatra Benet made up a whole story. So he said, there used to be a farmer, and whenever he had a shayla, he used to come into town to ask the rabbi the shayla. Then for a couple of months, he stopped coming into town. And after 3-4 months, he started coming back. He used to come every week for shayla. Then for a couple of months, he didn't come. Then he started coming again. So the rabbi asked him, where were you for the last couple of months? How come there were no shaylas? So he said, well, somebody told him that it says in Chumash that when you have a trefa, you give it lakelev tashlichanon, so you give it to the dog. So they told him, instead of traveling to town to ask the rabbi, just whenever you have a shayla on something, if it's treif or not, give it to the dog. So if the dog eats it, it's a simon that it's treif. If the dog doesn't eat it, it's a simon that it's kosher. So So he felt, what does he have to travel to Dan? He'll have the dog paskin all the Shabbos. So the rabbi asked him, why did you change now? Why did you start coming back now? He says, the dog is too machmer. He's eating everything. The dog is too machmer. Paskins, everything is treif. So that's the moshel that the Ramot Rabinet, that's a famous joke. So that joke, that's from that Maria Saad writes this in his Chubas, that he heard this moshel from his Rebbe Ramot Rabinet. When Ramot Rabinet met this reform rabbi, and the rabbi told him, and whenever he has a child, he's always machmer. So he gave that moshel jokingly.